Hi, I'm Johan, and you are listening to the Self-Serve SaaScast. One of the consequences of having to figure out how to grow self-serve revenue without a tested playbook is experiencing a plateau in growth. In a sales context, you've got a sales engine to complement your acquisition engine. So the more users you acquire, the more revenue you make. It's just not as cut and dry in self-serve. I had a recent conversation with Brian Castle, the CEO of ZipMessage, which is a tool for asynchronous communication, about how he overcame a plateau in growth like this one. And his perspective might surprise you. Well, if you're a regular listener, it probably won't surprise you that much. The key is to amplify what's really driving revenue and acquire better performing customers over time. Easier said than done? Check out how Brian did it. Here we go. Brian, thanks so much for joining us. How are you doing?
Doing good. Hey, Johan, thank you for having me on. This is fun.
It is a pleasure. To set the stage, Brian, tell us how ZipMessage monetizes its users. Is it purely self-serve or sales-driven, a little bit of both?
Yeah, today and since the beginning, it is fully self-serve. That might actually change in the upcoming months. We are making some changes in the product and the pricing. And so we might actually get into a little bit more of some personalized onboarding, but not yet. I mean, currently it's still customers come in. I would say it's a fairly typical SaaS model. We do currently have a free plan. Part of the plan is to end that soon and go to a more traditional free trial. But then beyond the free plan is just a couple of SaaS pricing tiers and customers upgrade themselves when they're ready.
Okay, awesome. So let's dive in. How much do you want to grow your revenue over the next year?
A lot. ZipMessage is still, I would say, a pretty young product. We're almost at the 2-year mark, and I still consider us very much in startup mode, which means I'm working on and I'm expecting to grow revenue quite a bit in the next year. I would like to see it at the very least double, if not better than that, over the next 12 months.
Okay.
And we're working on specific things to accelerate growth in the next 12 months.
So let's start with digging into this future state, the outcome that you're pursuing. How different is your company when it's making double the revenue? What does your company look like at this milestone?
Yeah, I would say that, again, we're in startup mode. And this is, for me personally, this is the first startup where I took a little bit of outside investment. Okay. Everything up until now has been 100% bootstrapped. This one, I consider it more like half and half because I've self-funded a bit from exiting my previous business. And then I took a little bit of outside investment from Com Company Fund. And so as of today, we are not technically profitable. And so if we double revenue and a bit more than that, then we're getting into break-even profitability. And that would be a good place to be.
Okay. So you mentioned that pricing is going to change and you're going to experiment with different monetization models. Is this part of the strategy to make the revenue growth happen?
Yeah, that's part of it. The product itself is changing and expanding as well. The value that we are delivering to our customers, our best customers are our professional coaches. And so up until now, we've had a great customer base just using us for the core of what we do, which is asynchronous messaging. So being able to record and receive and send back and forth messages using video, screen, audio only, or text. With ZipMessage, it's this conversational layout all on one page, all threaded. That's what we've been known for up until now, and that'll continue to be the core, but we're growing into other areas of running a coaching business, getting into hosting like interactive courses and interactive coaching, automating workflows where you can send messages to coaching groups and things like that. It's just becoming a much more essential tool that a coach can really build their entire business on. So we're building those features and shipping those features right now, this month and next month. And as we do that, we're adding a lot more value and becoming more of an essential tool. So that will bring with it some changes in pricing.
Okay. So walk me through the inflection point here. When did you realize that these changes needed to happen if revenue was to increase? Did you hit a wall in growth, for example, or did you like discover?
Yeah. So I think around early 2022, so around spring of 2022, we were about a year in and we had really solid growth up until that point. And then I definitely started to notice a plateau start to happen. I immediately went into customer interviews and I started interviewing a lot of our customers, like a wide swath of our customers. And I found that, and I had known this, that we had a pretty wide range of the types of customers that were using us. So we had a bunch of coaches, we had consultants, we had agencies, we had SaaS teams, we had sales teams, podcasters, all using ZipMessage in very different ways and different use cases, which seems sort of great at first, but then you start to see the plateau where it becomes less of an essential tool for some of those groups while it becomes more essential for others. And what I learned through a lot of these customer interviews and other analysis and surveys and looking at usage data and things like that was that coaches were the ones who did not churn and they used it the most heavily. They saw it as the most essential. So then I went even deeper with coaches and I continued interviewing them throughout the summer. I probably did about 40 or 50 different interviews with coaches and really dug into how they use our tool and how they are sort of duct taping our tool alongside one, two, or three other tools that they pay for. And there was a lot of learnings there, a lot of really clear patterns happening. And so that's right. What led me to the direction of what we're building and shipping now and making it a more cohesive, singular tool experience that a coach can build around.
That's fantastic. It's actually what we advocate ourselves. When we talk to companies about where to go next, we start with zeroing in on a specific outcome for a specific group of users and work backwards from there to build a pathway to the outcomes that they're most interested in. So you dug into coaches and discovered that they were essential to, that the product was essential to their workflows, more so than other user segments. But did you see correlations with revenue? And if so, what kind of correlations did you see and how did you calculate them?
Yeah, so you're catching me right now. I would say we're right in the middle of this long process of like building and expanding the tool into this direction. So we haven't fully realized the product vision. Like I've learned from coaches exactly what we need to build for them. We're about halfway through building it and shipping it. But that being said, we've already shifted all of our marketing toward coaches, which means that of the pie of users who come to us every month organically, more and more of that pie are coaches. Whereas before, it was pretty split between four or five different types of users. So now as we see more of our traffic and users coming in and they are coaches, we're clearly seeing a decrease in churn, which is a great sign. That's starting to confirm what I saw in the research, which was coaches churn a lot less. So we're seeing that. Right. And now we need to follow on with the other piece, which is higher revenue, more of a product for coaches.
So churn is the primary metric that's telling you coaches are the segment to focus on.
Yeah. And I would say that currently we're underpriced for coaches.
Okay.
And that's why we're building more and kind of following the aspirational pricing methodology where build more value to make it sort of like a no-brainer to charge more.
And how are you seeing the relationship between value and revenue? If that's too vague a question, I can rephrase.
Yeah, I mean, I just tend to think of it like in my research interviews, I always ask about what other tools are you currently using or which other tools have you used in the past and exactly how much have you paid for those tools or are you currently paying for those tools? I like to really get to understand that from customers. So I know pretty clearly what they're using and what they're paying for those tools, which starts to tell me how every business owner has a stack of tools that make up their business, right? You've got like an email marketing tool, you've got a CRM tool, you've got your communications tools, you've got your project management tools. Everyone has their stack of different tools. They're paying for all those things and they all add up to a monthly bill of SaaS tools that they pay for.
Right.
I see value as like occupying, not necessarily like checking off all the boxes in the list of tools that they need, but if you compare, so if you look at a small business or a coach or a consultant, they might be paying for 10 different tools, but they're different sizes, right? So like maybe two or three of those tools are in the $20 a month range. Two or three of those tools are in the $100 to $200 a month range. Maybe one or two of those tools might be a $300 or $400 a month tool. So the obviously the more expensive tools are more important. They value them more. I want to try to move our product to a position where we're at least in the middle tier of that value chain, if that makes sense.
So you're seeing value in operational terms almost, where you're saying, what does it cost you to operate your business? And how much of that puzzle can ZipMessage work into the product? So that operationally, the more you're covering, the more value goes up.
Yeah. And I like to think about it like, I'm not trying to get customers to start paying for our tool and our tool being the first time they ever pay for a tool like this. I find it more viable to try to replace other tools. They are already paying for other tools. We should make our tool better and make it an easier choice to choose us instead of those, because they're going to pay for that utility somewhere. It's an essential part of their business. They're going to need some tooling to run that part of their business. I want to make sure that the product that I'm building fills that utility for a certain type of customer.
Gotcha. Has this been a core principle to how you've seen the product even before you focused on coaches? Like before coaches were in the picture, were you seeing the product in these terms where—
I think ZipMessage, compared to other products that I've worked on in the past, ZipMessage took a very unusual path in its early days. It's not like this is a strategy that I would necessarily recommend to anyone else. And looking back on it, I think it might have ended up being a little bit harder. It was like really exciting at the beginning, but looking back, I wish I had more clarity sooner, basically. But what happened in the case of ZipMessage, again, it's a little bit of a fluke in my experience, is that it started as just a super small idea. It really started as like a side project idea. I was working on a different SaaS at the time called Process Kit. And ZipMessage was just a personal need. Like I wanted to be able to send a link to a customer and ask them to record their screen and send me back a message. Super easy, zero friction. Because all the other tools, I would have to ask customers like, hey, can you go install this video software and then record a video for me and send it back? So I thought that should be easier. So I built a simple tool. I built a simple version of ZipMessage, which was just to be able to communicate, send a link, and get into an async conversation. And yeah, it achieved that little need, but people quickly latched on to the idea of asynchronous conversational flow on one page, like back and forth, seeing video after video or audio or text all mixed and matched, all threaded on a single page. That's what, like, to my surprise, that was the thing that people latched onto when they see the tool, especially on the page. Like that's the thing that really captures their interest. So I sort of just embraced that out of the gate. I thought I was going to niche down to coaches from the very beginning because I saw that pattern early on, but I also saw interest from all these different use cases. So I started to embrace it and say, maybe ZipMessage actually is just a horizontal product that has lots of different use cases. But I learned about a year later that not all use cases are equal.
I'm so excited by the evolution that your company is going through at the moment. So let's dive into it in a little more detail. And let's talk about measurement specifically. How are you going to balance focusing on coaches and what metrics are you going to look at there versus everybody else? And what metrics you're going to look at there? Are the metrics even different?
This really should be easier than it is, but it's actually really hard to get good tracking. I know this is all about self-serve, SaaS, it's actually a lot easier to track if you're talking to every single new customer through a sales process, because you could just get the information you need about who each person is by talking to them. Right. But in self-serve SaaS, you have to actually code and rig up pretty complex tracking mechanisms. And I mean, I'm currently using Mixpanel plus several other Chartmogul, Plausible Analytics, Google Analytics, like all these different tools. And then a lot of custom code built into our application. We have an onboarding process that has sort of a survey. And so what I'm tracking generally is two things that are important to me that I think I finally have a handle on in terms of tracking. One is breaking down our traffic and our trial users by who they are. So like, what is their use case? Are they a coach? Are they a consultant? Do they just work on a remote team, like in a SaaS company? Are they a salesperson? And then the other thing that I break down is traffic source. So like, how many are coming from Google? How many are coming from, we do have a viral component. So like, how many are coming through our viral loop? How many are coming from referrals, and where are those referrals coming from? How many from the affiliate right. program, things like that.
So this takes the form of something like a question in onboarding?
Yeah, it's a few things. We do have a question in onboarding. It's just, I forgot exactly how I phrased it, but it's, you know, what do you primarily intend to use ZipMessage for? So that all gets stored on the customer's profile in our systems. We also track their initial landing page on our website. So if they like Googled and landed on a page that's like specifically about coaching, we can also sort of start to attribute that this person is probably a coach.
Okay. So walk me through how this measurement system evolves post-acquisition. So what happens during the trial and after?
Yeah, and this is going to change in the next few months as we shift away from freemium to a more traditional trial. But currently, every user starts, like they sign up on a free plan, free forever plan. Okay. And what typically happens is they run into the limits of our free plan pretty quickly. And then they decide to upgrade to lift those limits. And a lot of times that upgrade path happens same day, like first day, or during the first week. Other times, maybe they kick it around for a few days and then they come back a few months later and then they upgrade. So yeah, we have like several limits where they'll bump into a wall and see the upgrade screen and then they'll upgrade from there.
Okay. And you notice that coaches specifically were bumping into limits more, or they were the ones who were doing it on the first day?
Yeah, I think they do convert more, but it's more about they're more active users for a okay. longer period of time than other okay. users.
So not just that they bump into the limits, everybody does, but then once yeah. they upgrade, they stick around for longer.
Yeah, and okay. I can see in the usage patterns that they use it on a daily basis, whereas others might use it once a week or two or three times a month. And then if you're using it that sporadically, then you're more likely to churn at some point.
So were you seeing some kind of failure with the freemium plan that you wanted to fix with the free trial?
It's been over a year on the freemium plan, and I think that worked fine for a while. But the strategy, that the thought was when I started it, was use it as like product-led growth, right? So have a free plan where we have lots of free users who would use it heavily on the free plan. And then, you know, every time you share a ZipMessage link with a client or with a customer or with a freelancer you're working with or someone, you're exposing ZipMessage to that person. Okay. And then when that person responds to your ZipMessage, they have an opportunity to register themselves first as a respondent user, and then if they want their own ZipMessage account, it's like a one-click process, and they can get into their own free account from there. Okay. And we see that play out still all the time, but I thought that it would happen a lot more from the free users. But in reality, what happens is the viral users actually come from paid users, because it's the paying users who are sharing it a lot more. And the free users really just use our free plan like a trial. They're not using it as like a free tool. And so I think the strategy to really embrace freemium would be to make the free plan even more generous and lift the limits even more and make it a more useful tool for free, which theoretically should increase the top of funnel. But given everything that I've learned about who our best customers are it just doesn't make sense to continue to pursue that path. So I decided that since they're already using our free plan as a free trial anyway, we're going to move to a more traditional, probably a 2-week free trial period, which would expire. I mean, most customers currently convert to paid well before the 14-day mark anyway. So we're going to introduce new plans in early 2023 that are built off of that. And frankly, I don't think that it's going to be that drastic of a change again, because like we don't see a huge active user base on the free plan. All of our active users are on paid plans. So it's really just like more of a technical change in terms of billing.
Okay. This is kind of a theme to what I've been hearing from you so far as a whole. You see what's working and you double down on it. And this technical change won't affect people who aren't benefiting from it, but people who are, it'll work even better for them.
Yeah. Yep.
Nice. Speaking a little bit more about metrics, once people convert, what do you track there? Do you still continue to track behavior, or like how would you go about improving churn?
Yeah, I mean, we do have our tracking in place to see how active, like overall, like statistically, how many active users and how often do they use the product and things like that. So, I mean, if I'm honest, I don't look at the tracking data on an everyday basis. I don't look at it probably as much as I should. I look at it when I'm trying to make strategic decisions. But my day-to-day focus is basically on the product. I work directly in the product, in the code, and I'm like the product designer. And then I work directly with my developers every day, and I'm talking to customers every day. So that's mostly where my focus is.
Okay. Are there metrics that you look at on a day-to-day basis?
I mean, the ones that are like obvious right in front of me are number of customers and like how many new customers did we get today? How many new free signups did we get today? And I tend to, I do keep a log like on a weekly basis, like how we're doing week to week. And then I'll look at month to month. But again, like that's more of just like a quick glance. I try not to try being the key word here. I try not to let the numbers and the metrics really impact my focus or my mood too much. Like just because maybe today we had no customers or yesterday we had 3, I don't want that to like change any big strategies that we're going to execute. Like we're still working on the same strategies over a number of months. So that's where my focus is.
Let's talk about the journey up to this point, Brian. So just to summarize, you went really broad with Zip Message at the beginning. And now 2 years in, you're seeing that there's one segment of users that's more profitable than the rest. But going broad in the beginning, how did you get that off the ground? Walk me through what the company was doing in the early days, like the acquisition focus, the product focus. What was it like to go broad and see growth from it?
I think it started really quickly. I started coding the product in January of 2021, and we had first users in March and first paying customers in April of 2021. And awesome. It was pretty quick. And I don't have a large audience, but I have some of a network and an audience and a podcast and Twitter. And so that's usually where the very first place that I go to announce something new that I'm working on is I'll talk about it on my podcast, Bootstrapped Web. I'll send it out to my email newsletter. And so that's where the very first awareness and exposure for the product came from. And I would say compared to I've done lots of products before Zip Message, and this one clearly had just more widespread excitement and interest than everything else that I've done before. Because everything else that I've done before really only struck like a small sliver of my audience as being interesting and worth paying for. And this one, that's what led to it starting out of the gate with such a wide, like types of users, is that a wide swath of my audience found it interesting. Out of the gate, it's sort of like a blessing and a curse, because it does help it grow relatively quickly in that first year, but it also led to a lack of focus on who the best customer is. And I was a little bit torn because I knew I should niche it down, but I was seeing positive patterns on a bunch of different use cases. So it started pretty organically in the early days. And then I've been investing in content and SEO, and that started to help a little bit. And then it went up on Product Hunt, and that brought a pretty big spike of users. I mean, I also have gone on lots of other podcasts and had some exposure, and some well-known influential people have found it interesting and shared it, or they actively use it. And some are very active coaches, so they help spread it to other coaches. So
yeah. Got it. So there was like this promotional loop that kickstarted the growth and kept it going for a while.
Yeah. And we've seen the viral loop start to kick in as well.
Tell me a little bit about the viral loop. What do you mean when you say that?
Yeah. So every time you use ZipMessage, not every time, but if you're using it with customers or with clients or with freelancers, so people who are like outside of your organization, you're literally sending a ZipMessage link to a customer. And when they receive that link, it usually has like your first message to that customer, and you're asking that customer to respond. And then that customer clicks your link, they land on your conversation page. From there, they can click a little button that says reply, and then they can start recording from their camera or from their microphone, or they can write in text. And then when they try to post the message, it prompts them to say, do you want to get notified of when future replies come in? Then they can put in their name and email, or they have the option to post their message anonymously and they don't have to register for anything. They could just record and send it back. So most people do put in their name and email. And so now they are a respondent user. So now they're going to get notified from ZipMessage every time the next reply comes into their conversation. Okay. And when they're in there, they see a little call to action that says, hey, do you want your own ZipMessage account where you can send messages like this to your people, your clients? And they can click that one button, and now they've started their own free trial, and then they go through our free sign up onboarding process from there. So that's essentially how the loop works. The other thing that we have is a thing called intake pages. This also makes us different from other video messaging tools. So you can have your own intake page, zipmessage.com/Johan. And you can customize your URL like that. Like mine is literally zipmessage.com/Brian. And that's a page that I can share with anyone. I can talk about it here on the podcast. You go to that page, and that's a page where anyone can record and send me a message. So I can take intakes from like an audience, from a small group, and you know, that too exposes ZipMessage. There's like a powered by ZipMessage thing at the bottom, things like that.
Awesome. So I understand the viral loop, but just putting two and two together, people who came in via the viral loop, they weren't upgrading. They were just trying out ZipMessage, but not hitting the limits.
Yeah, some of them do. We do see people convert from the viral loop. Yeah.
Okay. So when you measure traffic source, tell me a little bit about traffic source and coaches. And if you're seeing any correlations there, just like you're seeing correlations with revenue.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still pretty early to tell, but I look at traffic sources as where should we be investing our money and time in terms of top of funnel marketing, whether it's continuing to push on Google, or I think we're always going to have this viral component. That's not going away. There's a little bit more maybe that we can try to push on within the product itself to try to promote ZipMessage accounts. We have like respondent users who've just responded to a ZipMessage, but they don't yet own their own ZipMessage account. So we can maybe do a bit more to nudge them toward getting their own. But traffic sources is just about looking at who's sending us users and where should we be investing to get more of them.
You mentioned before a little bit of frustration with trying to go product-led growth. Tell me a little bit more about that. What were the frustrations specifically?
I think it came down to inability to see those patterns, right? Because when you're really embracing freemium and product-led growth, like by design, you need to get a high volume of users into the top of the funnel. And that brings with it a high variability of users, totally different use cases. And so, of course, there are ways to slice and dice all that traffic data and see which ones are higher users and things like that. But the reality is, what I saw is that several use cases were very active in their very first days on the free plan. So it's not until they are actually paying customers for multiple months that you start to see which ones stick around and which ones drop off. So it just made it even harder to dial in marketing, to dial in product, to literally figure out which features we should be building or should not be building, because we didn't know who we were building for. Like literally for the first year and a half, I think we built a really great product, especially on the core being an async messaging tool. We just kept on hammering on that, like making that a really great experience to go back and forth with messaging. But all these other features that we're building for coaches now, like automation workflows and being able to run a coaching program, interactive courses and things like that, stuff wouldn't have made sense to build earlier because we didn't know which of our wide swath of users would find those features interesting. Whereas now we know our best customers find those features very interesting. So we're going to give them that.
And it's risky because you don't see the pattern until 6 months later and you see that growth plateau.
Yeah.
And second, you might think to solve that growth plateau in a number of ways that are not research. And research turned out to be the ideal way to figure out what was going on there. But I don't think that's a go-to method to solve a growth plateau for a number of founders.
Yeah, I mean, talking to customers is not easy. I've come to actually really enjoy it. I really do like it. So you got to get comfortable with that. I mean, I've had multiple previous businesses and some of them were much more sales focused. So I've built up that muscle of just being able to get onto a call with a customer and actually enjoy it. But at the same time, I'm all about async, as you might imagine. I don't like having a packed calendar of calls, like live calls. So I do a ton of communicating with customers using ZipMessage, which is all asynchronous. And my team were completely asynchronous. But all those research, or a lot of those research calls, I did get onto live Zoom calls just to pack in like a good 45-minute research call without having to go back and forth async. But, you know, like when I was really in the mode over the summer, like of sprinting on these research calls, I packed them in and I enjoyed it. And I think anytime, like for me going back years across multiple businesses, anytime I feel unsure or a little bit unfocused or having that fear, am I doing the right thing? Is this going in the right direction? The answer has always led back to once you start to talk to customers, you start to gain some comfort. You start to gain some confidence. Like, oh, my gut was correct because this customer confirmed it. Or this customer just said something and now five other customers just said something that sort of sparked a new idea in terms of, oh, there's something here that I didn't know existed before. Just hearing customers verbalize it, like it just gives you confidence. And so that's the best thing that you can do for sure.
Another really smart thing you did was you zeroed in on your most profitable customers and researched their workflows.
Yeah.
Did that come about organically? Did you talk to a bunch of people to begin with?
Yes, that was a very intentional progression. When I started seeing the plateau happen, what I first looked at was like, let me talk to the people who have used it actively in the last 2 or 3 months. And that was like a wide swath of users. I probably did 20 interviews or so that were like, maybe six of them were coaches, maybe six of them were something else. And I coupled that with survey data. I coupled that with usage data and I triangulated and I figured out, okay, coaches are definitely the path. It's totally clear. And then I focused the next like 30 interviews on coaches. And so like then the actual interview changed. Like at first it was more about a little bit more general about how you're using it and what other tools you're using it for and what are the use cases that you're using it for. And then once I started to zero in on coaches, the questions were much more about, tell me about your coaching practice. How is it structured? What tools do you use to run it? What are your goals? How are you trying to change it? So then I started to really see patterns in terms of, oh, all coaches have this sort of structure, or they're all trying to do this or that. And that relates directly to how the product should be structured for them.
Fantastic, Brian. Thank you so much for walking me through all of that. I think it would be really helpful to anyone who's trying to figure out self-serve on their own. Speaking of, I'd like to end with two questions. One, are there any big resources that come to mind that helped you figure out this self-serve engine?
Honestly, in my case, it's been a combination of being networked with other SaaS founders and really closely observing what has worked for other people. Not like necessarily following every single tactic that somebody else does, but just being having close conversations with friends and advisors has been a big one. And then the other thing is just building a lot. Like over the course of my career, I've built lots of different products and designed products, and I've researched and talked to so many customers in different ways. And that's just a muscle that you start to build up. And looking back on previous products, I could see where I wasn't focusing on the right things. And you just start to zero in on, okay, this is what matters. I'm very much a designer. Like I spend most of my time designing interfaces and how the product should function and things like that. So I feel like I've improved a lot on being able to deliver an experience that customers find very productive. And really, you only gain that through just building a lot of stuff and shipping a lot of stuff and moving quickly through that.
Right. And second, do you have any advice for people who are on similar journeys with self-serve?
I think that, you know, we talked a lot about the customer interview process, which is incredibly important. But I also think that in startup circles, there's been an overemphasis on customer research before you have a product in hand. There's a lot of like theoretical, it's fine to interview customers for if you're researching a market and trying to decide whether or not you're going to build something in that market. You want to, yeah, talk to customers to see if there's something there. But I've come to the conclusion where I'm not going to know for sure just by talking to a customer. Like theoretically, if I were to build this product and you tell me you're going to pay $50 a month for it, will you actually? That's not validation to me. I'm much more interested in talking to customers in deep research interviews after they've experienced my product or they're in the process of looking at my product and they can actually start using it today. And I can get their feedback on whether it's useful or whether we're hitting the mark or not. There's different types of talking to customers. Early on, it's more like exploratory. Is there a market here? And then later on, it's more about, does this tool meet your needs? What needs to be changed?
That was awesome, Brian. So many nuggets of insight there. Thanks so much for sharing your story with us. It's really interesting to see a product in evolution. And thanks for walking us through what's going on at ZipMessage at the moment.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Johan. This is fun.